Hey, welcome back to another episode of Living Hope, our weekly journey designed to provide hope, inspiration, and education for those living with pancreatic cancer, sharing the real-life stories of those really affected by this deadly disease and how they deal with it on a daily basis with our host, who's dealt with it, well, a year or two now. What's going on, 20-some years? I always keep forgetting here. 23 and still counting, folks. There we go, 23 and still counting. Today, we're going to count things that I've never even accounted for, which is genomes and genomics and whatever all those things are. Are you going to explain all that to us, Roberta?
Or did you bring a guest?
I'm not at all, because this is new for me, too. So I'm very excited to have Dr. Surat Darabi here with us today. She's the Director of Precision Medicine at Hoag Memorial Hospital. And she's going to discuss all this and talk to us so that we know what's going on. And her work is really cutting edge of science, and she's helping to bridge research and patient care in ways that's going to give us all hope. So thank you for joining us today, and welcome. And please, if you'd like to maybe recap, because we did a series this time, because there's so much information, we didn't want to just put everything in that 20-25 minutes. So it was really a great honor for me to do a series. So if you want to just kind of recap real quickly what we've done so far.
Yes, and thank you so much for inviting me. This is a great opportunity and honor to be here. You're right, this is the third one from the series. The first one, Chelsea talked about what is high risk for pancreatic cancer, who's at high risk. She talked about genetic mutations that some people may have, and then they put them at high risk for developing pancreatic cancer and other cancers. Some of these cancers may be familial, meaning that there are several cancers, including pancreatic cancer, in a family, but there are no mutations found in any of the genes that are currently known to be associated with pancreatic cancer. And some of the cancers are sporadic and happens by chance. And this can affect by lifestyle and other risk factors, smoking. We can do a lot to have prevention if possible, and through the high-risk programs. So the high-risk program, Dr. Demure discussed that with you. We have it at Hoag, but a lot of other institutions around the U.S. and around the world should have high-risk programs. And the way it works is the patients that they are either having a genetic predisposition or mutation or changes that put them at high risk for pancreatic cancer be enrolled in this high-risk programs, or they have familial, meaning that they have two or more family member, first-degree family members with pancreatic cancer on one side of the family. So those two family members should be related by blood, that they have pancreatic cancer, and they can be also enrolled in this high-risk programs. And through that programs, the doctors or the nurse practitioners that are trained, which we have one nurse practitioner also part of our team that she does high-risk program, that they go through, as Dr. Demure mentioned, scanning, they can do MRI, they can do endoscopic ultrasound and lab works to follow these patients, because we always think about if pancreatic cancer is detected early, then the overall survival is much longer than when it's detected as a stage four, as unfortunately the overall survival is low. And this is important to patients that they are at high risk to follow those guidelines. And this is one example I always bring. When we had our first pancreatic cancer stage one diagnosis at Hoag through the high-risk program, I was super excited. And one of my family members at home looked at me and said, "Are you happy that your patient has pancreatic cancer?" I said, "No, I'm happy that this patient was diagnosed at earlier stage." So this is important to know that early detection will really save lives.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm probably here still, is I was found early only because I kept insisting to be checked after losing my father, grandmother, and uncle to pancreatic cancer, and being told at the time I was in my 40s, I was told I was too young and it wasn't hereditary. And then during my treatment, my mom was diagnosed, and she was diagnosed with the neuroendocrine, whereas my dad's family was endocarcinoma, so two different types. And I also present, apparently, with both types, yeah, which is another rarity. Just because I kept insisting when each family member would pass or die from pancreatic cancer, finally my doctor took hold when I was having some vague symptoms myself. We've done the genetic testing, and so far it's come back inconclusive, so that's something we will be doing again because things have changed through the years. Thank you for what you guys are doing. Like I said, it's really great, and the high risk and early detection is so important. And why is it that we do need to be detected early to start treatment and to have that successful survival rate?
Because if pancreatic cancer detected early, it could be surgery possibility and also treatment, so patients doing better. But going back to your case and having inconclusive genetic testing or sometimes totally negative genetic testing, that doesn't mean that it might not be genetics, especially for families like yours that you have several family members diagnosed with pancreatic adenocarcinoma. There are research studies that are currently going, and I can explain a little bit about what are the two differences that are with current clinical testing for genetics versus what is going on in the research. The current clinical testing for genetics testing, we look at the methodology called next generation sequencing, or NGS, probably you have heard. Mm-hmm. So they are fragmented small DNAs. They put them together, amplify them, and put them together and then understand that changes from the reference, which is a normal reference that we have. But sometimes some of the mutations can be missed in this technology. So there are new technologies not currently available clinically, but available through research called long read sequencing. So from the name, meaning that they can read longer sequences. So this way, if any of the mutations that may happen to be within those fragmented area, now it won't be missed. We currently have a clinical study on pancreatic cancer. We're working with our local genetic laboratory. It's not clinical, it's research, but we enrolled a few patients that they had a strong family history with pancreatic cancer, and they were diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, but their germline hereditary cancer testing came back negative. So we're hoping with this new technology, we were able to find those gaps in clinical settings. And then sometimes it might be some genes that we don't know yet the function. So this is all part of the research. That's what we do. In the past, they were doing like a small panel of gene lists. Now we're doing bigger panels, sometimes the whole exome, meaning that all coding region of the genome will be sequenced, and then we can find out more information and more genes, and sometimes they do whole genome sequencing. So these are all new ways and research that we're trying to find more genes that are associated or within the genes that are associated with hereditary cancer, including pancreatic cancer, that have those mutations that can be missed by regular next generation sequencing technology that is currently used in a commercial setting.
Well, it's amazing what you can do. I think Paul had a question.
Two quick questions. Is it too late to get Roberta in that study? She's your classic example. Several key family members had pancreatic cancer, and yet when she's tested, they said, it's not in your genes.
It's great. Roberta and I need to talk about this after.
Because then she can come back and report what that's like.
Yeah, so we can talk about this on air, but definitely we can go and over the details, and maybe we should enroll you on one of these studies.
I'll tell you what really interests me, though, and that's a question I asked some of your other members that came in here. Okay, so I find out I've got a genetic disposition for that. Maybe I already knew because I had several family members die, or maybe I didn't know. Now what? Do I just track it so I can make sure that I detect it early should it arrive? Or are there things I can do to alter my lifestyle? You mentioned smoking. What can I do if I've got a high risk?
This is a great question. So once you know that you have a genetic predisposition to a cancer, for example, pancreatic cancer, but you're not diagnosed, you can go to one of these local close to your home pancreatic cancer high-risk programs. They go over the protocols, which can be imaging, a lab work, and some lifestyle changes.
Is this thing ProceedStudy.org?
Proceed a Study is one of the studies that is a consortium that Hoag is part of. That consortium, we follow the same protocol also for our high-risk pancreatic cancer patients. We do MRI, we do endoscopic ultrasound, we do a lot of lab works, and we collect data on these patients throughout the year. So they follow up. So research is very important on cancer, especially pancreatic cancer, such a unfortunate disease that will be diagnosed late because we don't have a lot of tools like a PSA we have for prostate cancer. We don't have a lab.
What Roberta says all the time, that used to be equally deadly, and once they detected it through a simple PSA blood work, people got it much earlier.
So yeah, we're in research, we're working on those biomarkers that there are, can be detected like PSA. We're currently doing ad hoc, we're doing research. So basically we do this protein study. So we have DNA, we have RNA, and we have protein, and protein are products. So we look at the proteins, like other proteins that they're in the blood that they test currently for clinical settings. So these proteins, we're looking to finding something when patients go through treatment. So before they start the treatment and throughout the treatment to see what changes in their blood sample. So hopefully there is a good biomarker. And it's not just Hoag. A lot of studies currently going on in the world that they look at pancreatic cancer blood samples to see if they can find a biomarker similar to other cancers like prostate cancer for PSA, so we can detect. There's also tests that are available currently not approved by FDA. So these are like healthy individual testing. They call it multi-cancer early detection tests. So they basically do blood tests there. One example is Galleri test from Grail is available to be ordered, but is not covered by insurance yet. So they take your blood sample and they do analysis on a specific methodology, and they come back with a potential top few cancers that a patient may have. We had that clinical study at Hoag, but that study closed, and we're hoping that the study called Pathfinder 2, we're hoping that the data will be published by Grail soon so we can see. But these are all, there's several other laboratories that they do pancreatic. It's not just pancreatic, all cancer types, early detection blood tests, but nothing in a clinical setting yet or something that is covered by insurance.
So I'm going to press once more. So once I found I got this genetic predisposition and I go to these clinics or studies or whatever, and they're going to track it and they're going to make sure that they catch it early should it develop. But can I do anything to prevent it from developing? Do Roberta cut out sugar after she was diagnosed? Somebody's told to cut. She was a big sugar addict. She cut all the sugar out of her diet.
Wasn't sugar, was Dr. Pepper.
Same thing, yeah.
So,
it's
yeah.
Just liquid sugar.
Always lifestyle changes are important in cardiovascular disease, in cancer prevention. So for pancreatic cancer, yes. Weight loss, quit smoking, cutting sugar, doing exercise, these are all practices that they're all suggested for patients, not only for the ones that they have the genetic mutation, because it's not only help with your cancer prevention, also help you with the cardiovascular or other diseases that can help you with exercise, has been studied in neurological disorders as well, studied that can help with the prevention. But we cannot replace it with the high-risk programs. It can go alongside. At the same time, scanning, doing the blood work, all the protocols are extremely important to be detected early. I understand some people may don't want to know, but once they know, might be unfortunately too late. And the sooner they know, the more options we have. With the advances in the genomic technology, we can do a lot more than we did 20 years ago.
And my last question, somebody else tweeted in and said, will we ever get to a place where you can genetically splice this out? So maybe it doesn't get rid of my problem, but I'm not going to pass it along.
I knew CRISPR-Cas9 is going to come up
with this. Genetic splicing sequencing or whatever you guys do to change it.
So basically gene editing is, I think, what they're referring to your audience. And that's a great question. Gene editing has been in a clinical setting using like sickle cells. They did studies on that. They're doing a lot of studies on gene editing on cancer. They can take some patient's blood sample, do some editing, and put it back in to trigger immune system. So immune response is better as immune therapy with gene editing. Studies are doing on a gene called TP53, which is T53 is a gene that repairs some of the changes that happens in the DNA, and is a repair gene. And when this gene mutated, sometimes in as a germline hereditary cause, Li-Fraumeni syndrome is a syndrome that these patients may have a lot of cancers in the family at very young age. Sometimes it only happens in cancer cells, not in all cells in the body, and then a lot of cancers have these mutations. So there are studies on gene editing trying to figure out how they can manipulate TP53 gene. And I know there are studies going on to work on changing genetic changes in BRCA1 or 2, but is not in a clinical setting yet. But I can see in the future that the studies will be ongoing, having impact in life in the future with advances in technology. That was a really good question that came from your audience.
This, we're doing cutting edge stuff here. So can they go in and just splice the gene or edit it and fix it here? I guess that's the issue.
That's exactly the plan for future. Hopefully that happens.
Yeah. Go ahead. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I got to just sit and ponder that. What does that look like here? We can go in and fix genes here.
Oh, that would be amazing, especially if we could take genes out we don't want, especially in all the cancers, get rid of everything totally. But you talk a lot about DNA, which I know we all hear a lot, so I think we all are probably familiar, but RNA and biomarkers, can you just explain a little bit what, and genomics, a little bit what those are that our audience can understand?
Yeah. So we talk about precision medicine. In general, we talk about DNA, and then DNA codes for the RNA, RNA codes for the protein, and protein is the endpoint that is actually do the work. So we not only look at DNA, we look at RNA. There are different types of RNAs there. And then also
what is RNA compared to DNA? I don't know what the difference is.
So the DNA is a big code, and then it is transcribed to the RNA, which is the shorter version, and it will be transcribed to translate to the protein. So DNA is bigger, and then RNA is smaller, and then goes to the protein that does the function. These are very important. DNA is important, RNA is important, protein is important. We do studies, in the science field, we do studies in all of them, multi-omics studies. We would like to make sure that everything's touched. Even now, in a clinical setting outside, I don't know if you've heard, in breast cancer, they look at HER2. So HER2, we do this testing if somebody's HER2 positive through IHC, immunohistochemistry, which is looking at the protein.
I know she's speaking English, but I have no idea what any of these terms mean.
So this this technology or this test basically has been for decades, especially we see that in breast cancer, where now we have in more cancers that they do protein analysis, and based on those protein analysis, we get FDA approval. And I brought up HER2 because HER2, the gene that encodes this called ERBB2, but we call it HER2 because it's more common use of the term HER2. And HER2 protein can be measured, and if it's positive or negative, or sometimes is in between, so is HER2 low. So all these can have implication for treatments. We talk about precision medicine targeted therapy. These are specifics. Now we're leaning toward to having more tumor-driven treatments versus organ-driven treatments. So what that means is when we get piece of a tumor tissue and analyze DNA, analyze RNA, analyze protein, then we treat those based on the results, no matter if it's a breast cancer or if it's the melanoma. I'm just bringing, we're not there yet, but we're leaning toward that in the future. And I have a few examples. One example is HER2. If it's HER2 mutation positive, if it's a tumor is metastatic, it's a specific need to be applied. But no matter what tumor type and organ type is, patient may be eligible for some treatments like in HER2 for targeting HER2. No matter what, if it's not breast, if it's another tumor, but it's HER2 positive.
And HER2 is the protein or the
DNA? It's the protein. Yeah. Yeah, it's a protein. We're getting to that point. There is in the RNA level and the DNA level, there are fusions, meaning two genes fuse together by accident, and that happens in a tumor. And then there is a NTRK, which is NTRK 1, 2, 3. If there is a fusion of some other genes to one of these three genes, and if it's positive, there are targeted therapy for these NTRK fusions, no matter what the organ is. if the tumor has this fusion and the patient has been through all the treatments that need to for the organ, then they're eligible to get those drugs and they have really good response. So these are rare findings, but when we find them, there is some treatments for them. So it's very important to emphasize that a research we're doing right now, it will affect the future generation and benefit the future generation. So I hope I answered your question.
And we're all worried about the cutbacks in research. Is that real? Is that going to impact all this stuff here? Federal grants to universities mainly?
Federal grant cut definitely affect clinical research. That can be not only for cancer, for other disease types as well. Hopefully not much.
We're trying to rally people, say, hey, cut out the waste in government. Don't cut out the good stuff in government.
The waste, I agree that it might be in some places that the waste happens, but I think that the big picture should be focused on research in the best way possible.
Because who else is going to fund it? It's expensive and it doesn't have an immediate payoff. Companies kind of wait until you guys at Hoag and other hospitals, you do pure research?
We do a lot of research at Hoag, but we are so fortunate that to be supported by philanthropy. But not all areas are so fortunate to have philanthropy funding to fund their research. We currently not affected by the cut yet, because again, the research currently we're doing, most of our research is through the philanthropy funding.
Wow, there you go.
Biomarkers are a big focus in early detection. Can you explain a little bit what biomarkers are and how they're showing promise in pancreatic cancer?
Biomarkers, I think we touched on them in different ways throughout this session and the previous sessions. That can be anything like protein that we can be detecting from blood, or a DNA changes that can be biomarkers that we can detect through less invasive manner for early detection. I brought up GRIL, that's a biomarker, and a similar testing like multi-cancer early detection tests that are available in the market. So those are, and I want to call it, there are in infancy most of these, but also promising for future that we will have some blood tests that is more sensitive than what we have right now. So we can, alongside imaging and other available tests, we can use those blood tests for pancreatic cancer early detection or any other cancer early detections before they show up. We also in an age of artificial intelligence and AI, so we can talk about it, because that would also help us. We take into a lot of different tools, and AI really helps with reading imaging differently, reading pathology differently. And again, for my colleagues out there, is not going to replace us. It will enhance our work. We are in an age of genomic technology, AI, and I think in the future we will have a very, at least, bright side of cancer early detection.
How close are we, because we talk about the blood test all the time, how close are we to getting a blood test that can detect it early?
Those are the tests that we just touched on, multi-cancer early detection. They are available in the market, but they're not replacing any other imaging that are available. They're not currently as sensitive as we hope to be. But thanks to research and all the fundings that go through research, we got to this point. We didn't have these type of testing 10 years ago, if you look back. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping in the near future, we will have additional tool, which is a blood test, to help us with early detection of cancer.
What challenges do researchers face in developing reliable early detection tests for pancreatic cancer?
In general, other than funding we just talked about, one of the challenges for research in general is participation, plus we need to have more diverse population that also participate in these studies. Unfortunately, these are not very, in terms of genetics makeup of these different ethnic groups, and they're not unified. So we would hope that we can get more people with different backgrounds to be able to have a better understanding of these cancers, including pancreatic cancer. and better tools to detect. I'm really hoping that maybe if an MRI or a CT scan in the past were not able to detect a small cancer or maybe missed, but now with the help of AI, we can just improve that as well. I'm really hopeful in the future that we can detect pancreatic cancer earlier, and so we can intervene with what is available to help fight this cancer.
Looking ahead, what do you see as the most exciting frontier as far as genomics and precision medicine for early detection?
I hope that a simple blood test can give us a lot more information that we are getting right now with cost-effective manner. If we look at these tests currently, they might cost thousands or thousands of dollars that not everyone can afford doing these tests. We're hoping that these are available to everyone, that with a simple blood test, we were able to see what this patient may have in the future.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I hope too, because like we talked about prostate cancer earlier. I remember in the early days advocacy, they had the same horrible survival rate that we had, and they came up with a simple blood test. And now they've switched so much to where they're almost 98% surviving this. So if we could do that for pancreatic cancer and some other cancers, the dead list, I think that would be so awesome. So
that's great. Also, there is important to know that this, other than the high-risk program that we discussed, I don't think we talked about pancreatic cyst.
No, we didn't. And thank you for bringing that up, because we did talk about that offline that we wanted to talk about. So if you want to, please do that.
Yeah. So these are the cysts that, depending on where in a pancreas they are, they might put the patient at higher risk, although the risk is way low. So I don't want people to be scared if they have pancreatic cysts, that most of these are benign and they don't turn into pancreatic cancer. But having a follow-up in the high-risk programs that they follow these patients, also very important, because they look at the cyst size and how throughout the year they may be changing size. They look at some of the genomics, and there are certain mutations, certain genetic changes in the cyst that they can look for. They also look at some blood tests. We do have a big pancreatic cyst program that we follow these patients, and they get referred where they need to be referred to if the cyst follows to the high risk of the cyst. But most of these are, again, benign and not worrisome. But I highly recommend to follow those pancreatic cysts as well. Not to be worried about it, but just follow them as well.
Yeah, I know a number of friends that have a cyst on their pancreas, which I was really surprised to learn. And they get checked yearly. Is that sufficient yearly, or should it be done more often, or does it depend?
They do yearly checkup. And they do endoscopic ultrasound, and they do CT scan, and they alternate those sometimes every year, depending on the size. And that might be different patient to patient, but that's the basic surveillance that they do.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because like I said, we did want to talk about that, and it wasn't in my notes. I appreciate you remembering. So thank you, because I would have kicked myself after we went off. Is there anything else you would like to leave our audience with, or our listeners, and just let them know that maybe we didn't cover? We can come back and cover it some other time, but something that you would really like to leave them with now?
So yeah, there is a lot to cover in just a few minutes. But what I really would like to bring up here, if that's our last few minutes, is cancer research saves lives. If you ever been hesitant to participate in a cancer research or any kind of research, remember, we are here because some other people participated in the research years ago. I often hear that some patients, they don't want to participate in a study because it's not directly benefit them. But I want them to know it might not benefit us now, it will benefit the future generation. I bring that up, it's over a decade that I'm part of American Cancer Society, Healthy Population Cancer Early Detection. We do surveys, we do blood work, we send them samples. So I am a participant in a study. So as a cancer researcher, I do cancer research, but I would like to also participate in a study. They don't tell me the result, they never did, but I know that results of those tests will help the next generation. It might help my kids, might help others. So please participate in a research study. If you're hesitant, we are very careful about the data. We are careful in a science in general. I'm not talking about Hoge only. But please participate in research, and hopefully your contribution will help the next generation.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I learned from a woman who lost her husband to pancreatic cancer, and we've become friends, that her husband actually did a clinical trial on a drug that I was given that actually, I think, helped my tumor become dormant. And so I was hearing that story, talking to her across the way. I didn't realize that until we were talking about it. And it was very emotional to know that this person, because he was willing, and it was a horrible, he had horrible side effects, but he continued because he knew it wasn't going to help him, but maybe it would help somebody else. And I really was brought to tears because it was a drug that helped me, and I was very thankful. So, yes, please do clinical trials, do the research, and maybe we can have you come back on and talk more about that and what to expect so people can maybe get over that fear and participate.
We didn't talk about clinical trials. We didn't talk about that yet. Yeah, of course. We will be happy to be back here.
Paul, did you have any other question, or are we good to wrap?
No, I think we're good to wrap. I'm just trying to digest all this stuff. Where do we find out more about you and the programs that
So Hoge has this website, hoge.org. You can go look at the precision medicine where our information is there. But I think we shared where to find a genetic counselor. We shared Precede website. Please share that with your audience.
That's also precedestudy.org, and that's how to find a genetic counselor.
.org, yes. So you can just do findgeneticcounselor.org and then precedestudy.org. And participate, please. And then for genetic counselors, if you can find your local genetic counselors, or there are a few genetic counselors that they are available through telemedicine, and they're approved.
And
for
is that
state.
Typically covered under insurance, or is that out of pocket? Do genetic counseling or genetic studies?
So genetic testing mostly covered by most insurance. Genetic counseling visit is not currently covered by Medicare. But other payers will pay, depending on insurance, of course, but they will pay and cover for genetic counseling. But genetic testing, most of payers cover. And then currently, labs have cash price as well. If the patient has a very high deductible, they don't want to pay it. Some laboratories provide some cash price, which is a couple of $100 for the test. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise with us. And really, I do want to have you come back because there's so much more to talk about. We just didn't even get to, I think, cover a small percentage of it. So it's very interesting. We really would love to have you and your team come back sometime.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be back. And thank you for having me and my team.
Thank you. Thank you. As long as you speak my name, I shall live forever. It's dedicated to the families carrying a genetic risk, to those who fight for early detection, and to the loved ones we've lost whose names and stories inspire every breakthrough in research. Thank you.
There you have it. There's some living hope. The type of stuff that's happening right now, and most people don't even know about it. Starting with genetic testing, and then genetic counseling, and maybe even someday genetic editing. All that and more we keep talking about, to give people living hope on their journey with pancreatic cancer. And if you know somebody that has it, or you're curious about it, we gave all those websites out, precedestudy.org. Lots of places to go and find out more information. This show, each and every week, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios.